Snifter. I hardly knew her.
We are here again in Nate's music studio recording room for episode 3 of Bourbon Buddy Brackets. Today is very special, Nate, because we are joined with one of our good friends. Mark is here with us as well.
Say hi, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
And it's a good thing he is, because today's episode, our seeds are number 4, number 5. They're right next to each other.
We figured we may need a tiebreaker.
Yeah. We didn't know in the first episode that we needed one, and it's really nice that we have one today, because I tend to think that these two bourbons, at least the way we have them seeded by price, will be the closest that we get to do. So we have number 4, Jim Beam, and to be specific, our Jim Beam is the white label Kentucky Straight Bourbon, aged 4 years, 80 proof Jim Beam, versus our number 5 seed, Rebel Yell. And I'm excited for today.
I am too.
Me too.
As we alluded to in our last episode, it was actually Rebel Yell that started this whole thing too, because you and I were both drinking that at the time and extolling the virtues of Rebel Yell and came up with this great idea.
And if you haven't listened to our first 2 podcasts, where can you get those, Matt?
Podcasts on SoundCloud, iTunes, or Google Play. Wherever you listen to your podcasts, we've tried to make sure that we're available there. And you can follow us on Twitter or our website. We've got our website as well. Getting more hits on our website, which is kind of exciting.
What is our website?
www.bourbonbuddybrackets.com. The old mouthful URL.
So why don't you explain a little bit what we're doing here in case this is first time listening.
We traveled to a Pennsylvania state store, and I actually want to talk about the state store later because I found more about the way Pennsylvania does it versus many other states, particularly Kentucky, where almost all of our bourbon is from, except for the old Bankers Club New Jersey bourbon. The rest of them are from Kentucky. But we went to the state store and we discovered that we have available to us, readily available to us, 10 bottles of bourbon for under $20. And then we're here just to answer the simple question, which is the best one? And as not whiskey connoisseurs or experts, or at least I'm speaking for Nate and Matt here, Mark is just about an expert at everything that he does.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We decided that we couldn't judge all 10 on nose and taste and mouthfeel and finish and come up with a score like the pros do. But given 2 bourbons, we could probably, between the 2 of us, pick which one was better. And given our love of sports, we threw them into a double elimination bracket. Double elimination because it's just fair that way.
Correct.
Right. So we decided a couple weeks ago in our first episode that we were going to try the higher seed first. So today, our higher seed is, in fact, Jim Beam Kentucky Straight Bourbon, our white label. So, Nate,
is it time for a bottle reading?
Well, let's pour and let it sit, and then let's do the bottle reading after, because that needs to happen. We also, just for in terms of consistency, we will have these on the rocks to begin with, and then if we need to go back and have them meet again. We had to do an episode 1 because there wasn't a clear-cut winner there.
Do we need to cut to a weather break?
Yeah, Nate, how's the weather?
Sunny. Back to you, Matt.
That's it. Oh, which actually brings me to another point. We recorded a mobile podcast, and we're going to try to insert it here sometime in this episode, the clips that I recorded. The 3 of us, Mark, Nate, and Matt, we all were on a canoe kayaking overnight camping trip last weekend, in which I brought a mystery bourbon to the fire that night. So
we drank it out of a bag.
We did. It was actually a Rebel Yell bag, because at the state store in central Pennsylvania, when you buy a bottle of Rebel Yell, sometimes you get a little
swag.
Little swag with it, which included a travel pouch bag with a carabiner attached to it. Nice. You know, so it wouldn't fall off your backpack when you're carrying your bourbon, I guess. But it was a mystery bourbon, and my challenge to Nate, and you didn't know this before that Saturday morning, but I was going to challenge you to guess which one of the 4 bourbons we had already tried was in that bag. So you had to guess between Ezra Brooks, Heaven Hill, Old Crow, and Bankers Club. And you knew right away it wasn't Bankers Club.
Yeah.
Because it didn't melt through the bag, for instance. That was the first indicator. Right. So Nate has poured, and by the way, you cracked the bottle, and I'm sure we heard it on the microphone. Crack the bottle, and there's no cork in that bottle, right?
It's a twist top.
It is a twist top. So we've got a twist top
versus a cork.
Versus a cork, Rebel. Does that affect the flavor for you guys? Just out of curiosity, or don't you?
I don't think so.
I
would think the only purpose of a cork would be in aging something.
No, honestly, I found out in the wine industry that caps seem to be better. They're finding a lot of wineries are going to, even the high-end wineries are, you know, people
seal
think
better?
Yeah, they actually seal better. The caps seal better than the corks. That's what I was told by many, but the people don't, the customer thinks that it's cheap or it's
inferior somehow.
So they don't on high-end wines they still use corks. And whether that's,
they feel like they're drinking a bottle of Boone's Farm.
Yeah, compared to, you know, 1956. Well,
there's probably a certain amount of loss, because if you do use regular traditional corks, you've got to lose some of the product,
yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
If you've just got a twist top cap that seals it, your losses will be.
Yeah, that's what, from what I read. I read that and heard going to wine shows and things like that.
So Ezra Brooks had a cork and Rebel Yell has a cork, but Jim Beam does not. It's a twist top. I did read that Four Roses, who was our number two seed, Four Roses, actually just switched to corks. So we haven't gone and purchased our Four Roses yellow label
switched
yet.
Switched two corks from
switched
caps?
Two corks. They were twist,
oh, really?
Twist top, and they
huh.
just released a couple weeks ago that they were putting their I don't want to call it their bottom shelf, but their
right.
their yellow label Four Roses budget bourbon that we're going to try here.
Their flagship bourbon.
Their flagship bourbon. They switched to corks.
I wonder if it's a marketing deal with
yeah.
people thinking that.
I'd be interested again. About that.
Yeah.
So, onto the bottle reading?
Onto the bottle reading.
Okay. Jim Beam, the world's number one bourbon whiskey, which I think we'll get to later, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. That's I verified that is the answer, and that is not just boasting on a label, because we've talked about this before the mic went hot here, that Fred Minnick says, other than the proof, the percentage, and the location, everything else on the label is pretty much bullshit. But that one is not. It's kind of impressive, actually.
Okay, Jim Beam Kentucky Bourbon Whiskey, signed by James B. Beam. None genuine without my signature. And we also have a picture of the legacy of the Beam family. Jacob, David, Colonel James B., David Beam, Booker, no. T. Jeremiah Beam, and Fred No.
Fred No is the current president. Is the current master distiller there. Fred No, I think he's the third.
Oh, yeah?
Is what he is, yeah.
Yep, master distiller since 1795. Here's to every Beam who has added his own special chapter to our story. Kentucky in our hearts, bourbon in our soul. Aged for 4 long years in the heart of Kentucky, Jim Beam Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey is made for those who take their bourbon seriously.
Where do you get four? Where do you get long years? Can you buy those?
Four long years. You know, I'll tell you what. Since my daughter was born, though, the years are getting shorter and shorter.
Yeah,
that's
so
I don't know.
Yeah.
So,
indeed.
Do you think there was a leap year involved?
There might have been a leap year. Well, if it's 4 years in a row, there's got to be
yes.
a leap year involved, right? So we all have our glasses now. I'm sure you can hear the clinking of the ice.
It smells good.
It does have a nice nose, mm-hmm. so it doesn't it?
Definitely.
What does it smell like?
Whiskey.
Well, yeah. As opposed to the Bankers Club that did not smell like whiskey. That is, you said that tongue-in-cheek, but after our last episode, that's where the
bar is. A little bit, almost like maraschino cherry or...
Yeah, there's some sweet to it.
Cherry. And then I turn it around and shake it, and it's a little bit of spice.
Now, Mark is definitely the most experienced. You said a few minutes ago, Mark, you alluded to your time in the wine industry.
Mm-hmm.
How much time did you have in the wine industry?
I spent 2 years making wine at a local winery. Not as smooth as it smells. That's not bad. It's spicy.
It is spicy.
Mm-hmm.
A little sweet, too.
A little sweet, yeah.
Sweet and spicy.
Got a bit of an alcoholic finish.
Yeah, it's definitely a little boozy.
Yeah.
We kept coming back to the adjective of leathery, and I've discovered, I think, leathery is something that a lot of people do use
mm-hmm.
to describe some bourbons and other whiskeys. But something else that they've used is a tobacco-y flavor. Okay. I'm not sure.
I think I mentioned that when we said with the old crow.
My point to that was I don't have that in this bourbon.
And I think from our first podcast when we did the Old Crow versus
Heaven Hill,
I think that's how I sort of sorted those out in my head. The one was more of the leathery, tobacco-y flavor. And the other one was more of the sweet malt, which I would kind of put this into that.
I'm getting malt is what I'm getting is...
Well, corn, rye, wheat, and malt. Malted wheat would be the malt part of it. And in theory, we've actually already had this mash bill.
Yes.
Because Old Crow has the exact same mash bill as this Jim Beam, except Old Crow is aged between 2.5 and 3 years. In different barrels than this Jim Beam. But
funny then that we really noted that the Old Crow had the more leathery taste.
Oh, and it's the same exact about that. If it's the same mash bill,
it's just something in the aging then.
Right.
And I think the Old Crow wasn't aged as long. Am I correct?
No, it's not. It was not aged as long. And we discovered that if the age is not on the bottle, it means it has to be aged at least 4 years. If it's less than 4 years, it has to be marked on the bottle.
Right.
Now, most bourbons brag about how long it's been aged, so the age is going to be on there. But although Heaven Hill's White Label was not, we had to look that one up.
Now, you were saying this is the world's number one selling bourbon.
It is. It is the number three best-selling whiskey in the world, number one being Jack Daniel's, number two being Suntory whiskey out of Japan. And this is the number three, but this is the one...
Well, Suntory owns this.
Beam Suntory, Suntory purchased Jim Beam in 2014. So actually, it's Beam Suntory is the same company now. So the same company owns two of the top three whiskeys in the world.
On that, I don't know if it's because of the ice melting or what. That last sip I just took, I got a lot of cinnamon. Are you guys getting cinnamon out of that, or...?
I think that spice, that spice that we described before, maybe as the water opens it up and mingles with the ice, that is one of the...
Yeah, it's definitely a spicy...
Oh, yeah.
Now, I don't know whether you've made that in my head now.
You're right.
When I shove my nose down in it, that's what I smell now, is that cinnamon, actually.
Yeah, I just, after sitting here swirling the glass...
I will say something interesting, too, back to these... glasses.
The Norlin glasses. So okay, Mark and I are drinking out of Norlin glasses now, and Nate has his...
And I put two ice cubes in everybody's glass. Both ice cubes are still intact. Mine are completely gone.
Really?
Wow.
That's impressive.
That is kind of interesting, because your Willet whiskey glass that you have right now is...
It's pretty thick.
That's got to be a quarter inch of glass all the way around.
It essentially is about the size of the bottom of a bourbon bottle.
Right.
It almost looks like you cut a bourbon bottle off of it. But yeah, completely gone.
As I'm on the Bourbon Buddy Brackets Twitter scrolling through, because I'm trying to follow people and kind of stay more apprised of the bourbon and the whiskey world, they're going nuts right now with the tariffs from other countries being placed on United States bourbon.
Right.
And I've read some interesting... things about this, but when you think about the truly billions of dollars a year industry in other countries are slapping these 25% tariffs on it.
Yeah.
One of our followers and one of our listeners, Mike Williams from Prinsoff Distillery in Sweden, and I went back and forth a little bit on Twitter yesterday about this, and he said, at least in Sweden, it's part of the European Union, bottles of Four Roses single barrel will go from $50 to $68, 25 to 30% increase in costs. And they hit Kentucky bourbon because it's one of those pure American exports that spread around through the world.
What distillery was that again?
The Prinsoff Distillery. The Prinsoff Distillery. I think I'm pronouncing that right. I didn't brush up on my Swedish before this episode, but... They distill or are distilling and aging not just bourbon. They're also doing some other whiskeys, and gin is something else on their website as well. And I kind of tongue-in-cheek to them, I said, well, if the pure American bourbon is going to be taxed at 25-30%, it might be good for somebody like Prince Off Distillery,
right,
that is trying to make an American-style bourbon. His response to that was, I wish it wasn't. I wish there was no trade war. I wish there were no tariffs, because it makes business a lot easier, obviously, right, without having to deal with that. But I will be looking forward to definitely following Prince Off Distillery and tasting their stuff, hopefully, in the future.
Yeah.
Now, did you look into the history of Jim Beam, saying they went back to 1795?
Yeah, and that follows. The names that you read off that...
And I did not read those in chronological order. I just kind of scattershotted those.
I wouldn't have been able to tell one way or the other. Other than the Fred No, I wouldn't have been able to go back at all. But no, seven generations. Something else I read about them, too, is that the Beam family and the distillers that came from the Beam family are pervasive in other distilleries in Kentucky. Heaven Hill, for instance, which is actually distills more alcohol than any of the other ones. Their master distiller is a Beam. Their very first master distiller had the last name Beam.
Oh, boy.
So Jim Beam is that name. Jim Beam, of all the names to be stamped on bottles, Jim Beam actually means something. It really does. The most impressive thing that I read about this Jim Beam is that they've been using the same yeast strain for 75 years.
Nice.
Same one. Wow. And that's what we talked about with the sour mash. Dr. James Crow perfected that in the mid-19th century. That taking that active yeast strain and transferring it to different vats again and again and again. And they've been doing it for 75 years straight at Jim Beam.
That's impressive.
Which is pretty impressive. I'm getting the cinnamon. I can't taste this anymore without the cinnamon.
Mm-hmm. It just got a blast of that. I think it might be the water or the ice.
Yeah. I've noticed such a noticeable taste difference since mine's been diluted with... Mm-hmm. Completely melted ice now.
Now I'm getting a little bit of caramel, I think.
Caramel?
Yeah, it's not as bitey, it's a little smoother, so I'm getting caramel, which is...
I think that's happened to nearly all of the bourbons we've tried so far, that as you let it sit, open up with the ice and the water, and even just breathe neat, it mellows it.
Right.
It really does take some of the finish bite off of it.
I don't know how you guys approach this or how you think about it. Whenever... I offer somebody whiskey, say for instance, people always have this, give me an ice cube. Why not try it neat first, see what you think? Because the ice cube completely changes it as soon as you pour the whiskey over top of it. Mm. I don't know, is there an etiquette on that? Like when?
Go ahead, Nate, go ahead.
I was going to say, we started the first episode we did, and it was kind of accidental. Like Matt said, I want to do this on the rocks. So we both did it the same way. And then we would typically go back afterwards and do a little bit neat afterwards. Right. But I'm not sure, is there an etiquette?
Well, after episode one, I asked the same question, because here we are recording ourselves and not connoisseurs, not experts. I had that question, what is the correct way to drink whiskey? And there are suggestions, but at the end of the day, the experts out there basically say,
Whatever you prefer.
I would say I'm with you, like in a social setting, or if I have somebody over at my house and I get a bottle of whiskey out, I would typically tend to pour myself a glass neat.
Me too.
I do like the experience with the ice cube too. Yeah, where
it changes. Kind of, it actually changes the flavor.
It does, and that's interesting. I've even read about guys taking the little vials and dropping water and things like that just to. They say open it up, whereas...
Well, chemically speaking, it does do. That on our research, our second blog post. I found a link to a chemist that actually tells you what that water does to whiskey out in your glass when you let it sit there. Yeah.
So what about pond water? If I just went to a pond, a little bit of pond water
does... I do think it's worth mentioning that we are drinking... Was it Kenmore or Whirlpool ice cubes here?
Right.
So it's
Frigidaire, I
Frigidaire.
Think.
Frigidaire.
Yeah,
Frigidaire Springs ice cubes.
So. LG ice cubes, nice.
But then, did you not say that with scotch, too, there is sort of an etiquette with scotch on how long it is aged to how much water you put in it?
Yep, single malt scotches. That is absolutely true. The training that I went to, this is almost 15 years ago, the single malt whiskey training that I was at, if you order a Glenlivet 12 versus a Glenlivet 25, as a bartender, we had to ask, do you want it? How do you want it? And if they say just a bit of water, a splash of water, what that meant as the bartender is you got to determine how much water to put into it. And the idea was the older it is, the less water is actually, H2O is in it, because they call that the angel's share, right? The stuff that actually evaporates from the barrel.
Did anyone put a pack of stevia in it?
No, it's the Michael Scott. Too many Splenda. As we take a coordinated drink ourselves. I like the cinnamon notes. I'm smelling it, I'm tasting it. And
I'm getting definitely lots of cinnamon with this.
No tobacco, no what I would describe as leathery with this one. Yeah.
No,
it's a good, solid bourbon.
It is. Like bourbon. I agree. Yeah. I agree. Very drinkable.
I think we've said that about all of them except for Banker's Club.
That's the thing about ice with me. It never stops. You know what? If you could get it to that point where it's right.
Well, maybe that's the idea with the water. Is that I'm sure that there are people out there taking notes, and that when they drink the, you know, the bottled in bond 6 year from such and such, they know exactly.
Well, I have 5 milliliters of water that I put in. That makes perfect sense to me, because that's where you get the sweetness, or not necessarily the sweetness, but the sweet spot, I guess you'd say.
Speaking of the people taking notes as they're drinking, I actually tweeted out a little bit of a ode to Anthony Bourdain.
Oh, yeah.
Just here. Passed. Yeah, we're going to have a drink right now.
I need to add a little bit of time to do that.
Well, that's good. If we're going to do it, we're going to make sure. Yeah. Unfortunately, we woke up to the news that Anthony Bourdain had passed away.
Yes.
And there was a lot of people, I think it says something to him, a lot of people not only in the food world, but just regular people that were saddened by his passing.
Yeah,
so
me too.
This sip is definitely a one of a kind.
Yeah.
One of my favorites.
Here's to Anthony.
But I actually did a Google search. I just said Anthony Bourdain and whiskey to see, because I'm sure that there's lots of quotes about drinking, and I went through a couple dozen of them, and I found one that I really, really liked, which not only speaks to Anthony, but also speaks to the three of us together here among good friends. When pressed, it was a bizarre interview that he did, Harper's Bazaar interview from 2015, a few years ago. They kept asking, well, what's your favorite whiskey? What's the best one you've ever had? And he kept kind of dodging the question. Well, he finally gave the answer, and this was his answer. He said, I would rather go into a regular bar or pub whose ambiance and atmosphere I like and be fortunate enough to find a good whiskey or a good scotch or drink, rather than go into a place surrounded by people taking notes. I want to be surrounded by people drinking whiskey, enjoying their lives, and listening to good music. Not necessarily a party boy atmosphere, but a congenial thing. Whiskey should be a part of a larger picture. It shouldn't be scholars sitting around taking notes, in my view.
So nice. I like that.
Yeah.
Here's to the three of us sitting around enjoying whiskey, right. But also Anthony Bourdain. I mean, that was him, right? It was about the people sitting around sharing something more than it was the thing itself. Yeah.
I think that's what was unique about him, too, is he had clout as somebody that his opinion mattered,
right.
But he didn't take He didn't take that real snobby, pretentious kind of
Was honest in all of his approach to everything, which is great. It's the best way to be and not be...
Later in that interview, he was talking about traveling to... He said, I have had some real good whiskey and I've had some shit whiskey. And a lot of times he said some of his best memories were having some of the shit whiskey that were passed around. He'd be in some Uganda. Somebody hands him a plastic Fanta bottle filled with something they distilled that's still like bubbling in the back.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's what I remember is having that whiskey. And it wasn't about the whiskey. It was about being there.
The
somebody
experience.
Proudly handing
the
him
experience,
something.
Yeah.
It was always about the experience. So
I think what I liked about Bourdain, too, is he had a way of telling a story that, I mean, he approached it more like a writer.
Yeah.
You know, like when he would do his introductions and his conclusions to the shows. But he did the shows with personality, so you almost felt like you knew him because he let his personality show, and not, it wasn't scripted. It was him.
It was authentic.
Yeah.
God, when he would travel and you'd watch those, it made you want to go there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One in particular, he went to the Sapporo region in Japan, that northern island. And I told Brandy for a month after that, I'm like, we're going. That's our next vacation is right there. I don't want to go to Tokyo. I want to go to there, and I want to go to that specific spot.
We have vacation ideas. from watching that show. And sadly, the night before we found out that he passed away, we're going to Vegas in 2 weeks. I said to my wife, I said, let's go back and watch that Parts Unknown, the Vegas one, just to get some ideas of places to eat. So the night before, we watched that.
Oh, really?
Then the next morning, we woke up and...
Well, you know, I didn't find out until last night.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't know. Last 2 days, work, just busy. And I found out, I went to pick up some chicken feed. And when I grabbed my phone, I hit my news button and it came up. And I looked at it and I took a double take and I thought, what? Crazy. But so this morning I was reading a little bit and it had said about locals in these far distant places now are kind of not really crazy about Anthony Bourdain's visits because now they've got
people flooding in.
What they say, flip-flop wearing American tourists flooding these places, and because it was a locals bar, and he was perfect for finding and digging out the local scene and going to it and exploiting it, though not exploiting it. But
probably unintentionally.
It changes them because once they've gotten the notoriety from somebody famous being there, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. What a great time. At the end of your life, if you can say you've left the world a better place than when you came
I feel like he's one of, not just
a small niche of the world, which I hope we can all do, leave kind of a small niche of the world a better place, but he actually left the world. I mean, a world traveler, and that's pretty neat.
You know, a neat thing about Anthony was when my kids were little, of course, we would watch that show. My kids are both foodies, and they loved it.
That would have probably been no reservations at that time.
No reservations, and we came up with the fifth day family dinners, which was every Thursday. Remember I was telling you about, we would, and that was inspired by Anthony Bourdain, because we would, all four of us, my wife and both of our daughters, got to pick whatever we wanted to cook. We would buy the ingredients and then we would just see what we could make, this exotic food, and the kids and of course we kept a journal and the kids wrote about it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah,
that's
a good idea is what that is. Yeah, we last night around the campfire, Olivia, my youngest daughter, my wife and I.
And she's a cook right now.
Yeah, and we were talking about doing that again, revisiting that and going back simply because of the passing of it. So finding out Anthony Bourdain has this great television show and we watch it inspires us to do this now that our kids are grown and we haven't done it in many years. His death has also inspired us to take it back up. So what a fantastic human being.
Shall we pour the rebel yell?
Let's pour the rebel yell. I'm going to toss out my ice real quick. And I still have a little bit of ice in the bottom of the line. Jim Beam, though, I drink it again. Absolutely.
Oh, definitely.
There's nothing wrong with that bourbon, that's for sure.
Yeah, 2 cubes.
Okay. Yeah, I would definitely drink this any day.
Out of the Yeti cooler. Now, wait a second, Nate. This is a different Yeti cooler.
It's a different Yeti tumbler.
It's not, no. Unless it's been spray painted over a rebel flag with a Punisher, I don't think it's...
It's a different one.
It's a different one. All right.
So, can I have... I just have a question.
Yeah. Well, Mark's holding... I had printed out from our website, bourbonbuddybrackets.com, each one of our...
Thank you, Nate.
Seeds in each one of our bourbons, I tried to go out and give just a little snippet of a little bit of history and maybe a tasting note. And I'm trying to give some shout outs to some other websites too that I'd really like to be nice to start a relationship with some other guys. There's some great, speaking of that, I'm going to go off on a tangent here.
It's okay.
There's some great podcasts out there. Dad's Drinking Bourbon. It's a couple guys in Kentucky. They have to be late 30s, early 40s. And just they get together and chat about life and drink bourbon. Well, so I figured on our website we should have just a little snippet of the 10 bourbons that we're doing in a bracket.
Well, Nate and I did this in my shop. Yes. How many nights in a row? What we didn't have a microphone. Yes, unofficial. Yeah. Most nights we would drink a bottle between the two of us and discuss that and talk about life, and it was great. I mean, the conversations, maybe ideas over whiskey, guys sharing whiskey.
Yeah.
What what has been wrought out of that. Imagine.
Yeah, I've never really thought of it that way, but we've had some conversations where I wish there was a microphone
right.
over a bottle of whiskey.
Sat there for hours and hours and hours drinking Roaring Creek, anything we could find that was interesting, and we would drink it.
Some part of me, in a weird philosophical way, I get selfish over those conversations, and here's what I mean by that. I like the idea of having a microphone to go back and visit, and you, Nate and I, Matt, have talked about the fact that 10 years from now, we're going to listen to this podcast, and we will crack up, and we will, you know, we'll over some whiskey and stuff. It'll be fun.
But yeah, definitely.
But there's also a part of me that has those memories of those conversations that I enjoy, because I feel like they're all our own.
Right.
They're our memories, and they're inside of us.
Sure, just it's very personal.
I was in Italy, it's got to be 7 years ago, 7 or 8 years ago now, and we split, we being my friends, Max, Sam, and I, and Sam is going to be on this podcast in a few weeks too. He and his wife are visiting Central PA. A little plug for Sam. But the three of us split a 5-liter jug of wine on the island of Elba on the west side of Italy. And I'm pretty sure that we cured all of humanity's problems. We discussed, the origins and evolutions of life and
sorted it all out.
Right. Woke up to, still to this day, the worst hangover I've ever had in my life.
There's nothing like a wine hangover.
Oh, God. 5-liter bottle of wine hangover. Yeah. But we had a great time, and I will always cherish that memory. And I would have loved to have a microphone there, but at the same time, there's part of me that's like, that's just between the three of us.
Is that even a bottle at that point, or is that a jug?
Oh, it was a jug. Sam actually was so proud of the fact of how much wine that we drank that night. He carried that jug through two other cities, because we went to Siena, and then we went to Florence, and he was carrying that jug because we were meeting another buddy, Chris, in Florence. And all he wanted to do was show Chris, this is how much wine we drank in one night in Elba.
Nice.
Shall I do the bottle reading?
So Nate's poured three glasses of Rebel Yell.
Okay, Rebel Yell, Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, handcrafted according to the original time-honored recipe since 1849. 750 milliliters, 40% alcohol by volume. A little stamp here, San Francisco World Spirits Competition 2016 Gold Medal. The award-winning American whiskey that honors the rebel in all of us. Are you rebel enough?
Is that rhetorical, or do I need to...
It doesn't really say.
It doesn't say. Well, I guess www.
I guess it depends on what level you are in the bottle.
Whether we're... Keep by the end of the bottle, you will be rebel enough.
By the end of the bottle, you have enough rebel in you to do whatever you...
The bottle's very plain, isn't it? I mean, there's not much to it.
But you were saying before that they're sort of modeling this to... Or they're...
Mark was saying.
Marketing this to the younger
generation. Yeah.
And even the tear and the label, it's kind of edgy. Well,
look at the bottle shape, too. It's very old school.
Yeah.
With the cork, you know what I mean? And nostalgia with all the...
It's old school and like what you would see in an old Western movie.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's
whereas this Jim Beam bottle, when you look at it, it looks like your traditional... like when you think of a bottle of bourbon, that's the shape of bottle you would think of. This is something I would... Yeah. See in a cowboy movie.
Exactly. That's, I think, what...
Yeah.
It's marketing...
Where you bite the cork off.
Yeah, exactly.
This one did have a cork, too. It does have a cork in this one,
Spit it off to the side, and then...
Don't give me a glass, give me a bottle. And this is Lux Co. Distillers.
Yes. Right?
Lux Co. Distilleries, who just... We mentioned this last episode, because Ezra Brooks was also Lux Co.
Lux Co.
And they just opened up their own distillery. Now, what we're drinking was probably distilled at Heaven Hills facilities in Bardstown, I believe. But this, I would say within the next few years, will be from their own distilleries.
I noticed right away, it doesn't have the nose.
I was just thinking the same thing. It's not quite as...
It doesn't have the nose of the bean. I'm going to try it fresher. But when you poured it, I sniffed it. Nope, just it doesn't have the nose of the...
No, you're right.
Yeah.
It's a little, I don't want to say bland, but there's not as much there. Mm-mm. They're just about the same color. I'm looking at the site here. They're just about in the bottles. And there'll be pictures on our website with... They're just about the same shade of sort of that nice caramel amber color.
The one thing I will notice... Initially, and I don't know, I did let this one sit a little bit longer before I took my first drink, but it's not, the first couple sips are not quite as harsh
right.
as what the Jim Beam was, But again, it's not quite as complex either.
Now, do you think any of that, just out of curiosity, because this is the second bourbon we've had, we both had, all three of us had some generous taste glasses buds of,
might be a little bit.
Yeah, of the Jim Beam, so now we're on to Rebel Yell.
That was kind of like the River podcast after 20, 22 beers, you're not exactly sure what you're tasting.
Tell you what, let's listen to part one of this mini River podcast. I want to play right now. Nate and Matt were on the river going through some rocks. And I set my phone in between us and we recorded this little snippet right here.
A mobile podcast, Bourbon Buddy Brackets.
Hello. Currently navigating the white waters.
Is a rock up ahead? You didn't want to steer into it then?
Did you like how I said 1 o'clock?
We're such good seamen. There's nothing but good seamen in this boat. Mobile podcast. Just a little treat for our listeners.
Big audience in the UK.
So I'm excited because I have packed a mystery bourbon for Nate, and it's one of the four bourbons that we have tasted in our episodes. It could be number 7, Ezra Brooks, number 8, Old Crow, number 9, Heaven Hill, or number 10, Banker's Club.
I think it's Banker's Club to disinfect the ripples.
I'm going to depollute Central Pennsylvania waters with Banker's Club.
2 drops per gallon.
2 drops per gallon. So we'll pick it up again in a little while when we sit down to drink the bourbon, but just a preview of what's going to happen tonight. Nate has to guess which one of the four bourbons that I've packed for us to drink around the campfire tonight whilst in the wilderness.
It's not as
on a scale from 1 to 5, this one might be a 2 compared to the 5 of the Beam.
Yeah.
I'm just off the top of my head. Maybe it's the ice. Maybe one ice cube in this would have been a little better.
Do you get any of the cinnamon?
I'm getting some cinnamon. Yes.
Because when I'm smelling it, I haven't tasted it yet, but when I'm smelling it, it's dulled. It's almost like Jim Beam, except dulled.
It is a similar flavor, though. I would say, like in the profile, where you don't have the leathery. Mm.
The finish, though, I'm getting a little stronger finish, a little heavier finish on this
one. It lingers a little bit more than the Jim Beam does.
It's kind of that big mouth feel. Where I am right now with this finish, it's kind of a bolder finish than...
Yeah.
It lingers. Definitely lingers.
Would you call it spicier than the Jim Beam?
I wouldn't call it spicier.
I would think the Jim Beam is almost a little more spicy than this.
And the thing about the Jim Beam, though, it was kind of interesting, too. It was sort of consistent, though, all the way through with the...
Yeah.
Of course, it was dulled down by the ice cubes, but it was kind of consistent with the...
I feel like the Jim Beam almost was a little sweeter, too.
Yeah.
I'll agree with that. The sweeter flavors of the Jim Beam versus the
Rebel. I really like the finish of this one, though. It's really
nice. I'm with you on it. It's not a bad... It lingers, but it's not bad at any...
That's what I mean. It's a really nice
finish. I feel like this one's not as complex, but it's almost more drinkable.
Yeah. It's smoother. It's definitely smoother.
In the sense, like, if you're... Oh, guys, we're going to have a tough decision here. It's a good thing there's 3 of us.
It's definitely smoother. Yeah. Well, okay, on the finish. Maybe just because of my lack of knowledge, it says reminiscent of White Dog. Peppery, and again, syrupy as it was on the nose.
Yeah, the peppery, peppery is actually, that's what I taste when I asked you guys about now spicy. Now that I think about that,
a little bit of peppery on the peppery, finish here, but what is reminiscent of White Dog?
Yeah, I don't understand.
Maybe White Dog is another type of whiskey or
whatever. And it's not...
Find out on our blog, because I will totally find that out by the time we post
it. It's not capitalized, so...
Yeah. Maybe they just mean a real white dog.
somebody licked their dog one day and said, "Yeah, it tastes like my dog." No, we're not saying that Rebel Yell tastes like your dog. It tastes good.
And Matt's out for a pee break.
What's on that stump out there, Nate? Is that a gargoyle?
Yes, Frank the Gargoyle.
Frank.
Do you know, Matt, while you're doing this, I Googled white dog. And do you know what the first thing that came up as a suggestion was? White dog poop.
What? I don't think Rebel Yell tastes like white dog poop.
No.
It's a little racist too, isn't it? I mean, black dog poop, brown dog poop. Search White Dog Whiskey.
Yeah, White Dog Whiskey. Up. Yeah, see what it says.
Well, that's a whiskey from Buffalo Trace.
White Dog.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Oh, so it is a whiskey.
Yeah.
Okay.
That answers that.
Well,
all right. Reminiscent of White Dog. See, that's one of the things that I truly believe is nice about this podcast is we're just comparing the two that are in front of us. You know, we're not bringing in other stuff.
Right. This just goes to prove that we're not experts. None of us knew what that was.
Yeah. Also that.
Yeah. I'm liking both of these, though.
I am too.
We
kind of knew that this was
going to
happen.
I think we're going to have to do a small drink of each afterwards. Neat.
Neat. I agree.
Just a small, maybe, yeah.
I don't know if it's me. That last sip is like I don't know how to say this, the most profound taste I've had to this whiskey yet. So is the ice?
I think the ice is because after I took the first two drinks of this, I was like almost certain I was like leaning the other way. And now after the last couple, I'm switching sides again.
I'm with you, man. I just taste
it. Maybe it is the ice opening it up.
I could be.
Really.
And that impresses me because I've always been that, for lack of a better term, the neat freak. I just like drinking my whiskey neat.
People that drink whiskey neat, they pour it and they let it sit too. Yeah. In the air itself will open it up. And that's one of the things when you go to the Northern Glasses website, they'll talk about the mouth of the glass itself is more opened up than the traditional Glencairn.
Right.
Glencairn,
the tulips kind of.
You're right. It is tulip more at the top where the Glencairn might be better for the nose itself, but these might open it up.
So who gets that job? Let's design a whiskey glass. Sit around and drink a lot of whiskey and make a lot of glass.
It
kind of
reminds me, too, even like do you remember when the Sam Adams had the perfect pint glass?
Yeah.
They have that laser etching of the bottom that you can actually see the bubbles come up in that almost DNA double helix swirl, which is pretty cool.
Wine glasses. Look how many different wine glasses there are for different wines. It makes sense, but
beer glasses are the same way too.
Glasses,
Belgian tulips, and you have snifters, and
one of the amazing things when we went to Belgium last year, the Belgian beers themselves were so careful to make sure that they sold glasses with their beers. It didn't matter which pub or bar or whatever you went into. When you ordered a specific beer,
there was a
glass for that.
If you ordered a Chimay, it came in a Chimay glass.
It's Chimay glass. Right. Like nice. That, and there was no, and I asked my friend David about it, and he said, oh no, it would be absolutely frowned upon. A Belgian, if you ordered a Chimay and it came out in a troubadour glass or something, it just, that was a big no-no. It had to be.
I like that because it's culture.
Yeah.
You're not only are you experiencing the beer, but you're experiencing the beer the right way.
Well, my wife makes fun of me too because I'll pour beers. And I have glasses
specific
up there
glasses.
That
yeah.
She drives her nuts because it's like, what the hell is this stupid glass for? Right. It's like, well, if you have a Belgian quad or something,
that's what you want. Yeah, yeah. That's part of the culture, which is great. I love that stuff.
Yeah, appropriate glassware.
I'm not getting any more nose out of this than I did, but the flavor has changed, and I really we've experienced this bourbon how many times, and it's a very good bourbon.
I was much more familiar going into the Rebel Yell than I was the Jim Beam.
Honestly, me too. I hate to say this, but I'm one of those guys. If it's popular, I don't like it, even if I've never tried it. Shame on me for that. But I am impressed by Jim Beam.
You always had the misconception that it was like the cheap bourbon. It was just the run-of-the-mill, nothing fancy.
I agree, yeah.
That was always...
Well, it still comes in at $17.99. $17.99 is where it comes in. Rebel Yell comes in at
$16.99. Yeah.
I was in Altoona when I bought these, and I a little bit larger state store there. I did look for some of the other bottles, but I didn't find any other sub $20 bottles.
The only one that I have seen, I was in
that Dubois. I was looking for Weller's.
Oh, Weller's,
the big one I was looking for. But
yeah, that's true because I have read that there's something called a Weller's Antique that comes in at $19.99 that has actually gotten some great reviews. We haven't found that, and that was part of our, I don't want to say shtick, but that was part of our deal. Is you go to Central Pennsylvania State Store.
This is what you get.
This is what you get. These quite literally were the 10 bourbons under $20 the ones that we have here. But when I was in Dubois, they had JTS Brown. And that name,
JTS?
JTS Brown. Brown is the name of this bourbon, and it was actually priced at $17.99. So it would have met our qualifications, just wasn't available to us at the time. Interestingly enough, the JTS Brown name, that JTS Brown name is really historical, not quite to the point where Jim Beam goes back to the 18th century, but the Bottle and Bond Act, and then through the 20th century following Prohibition, JTS Brown is still one of those bonded liquors that's available out there. So the name itself, I don't know anything about it.
Right.
I just know the name itself is pretty historically significant.
Huh. Interesting.
I feel like we've learned a lot.
Yeah.
I'm serious. I just feel like in the last month that we've been doing this, I have learned a lot.
Of course.
From our first episode of making fun of Dr. James Crow, and then realizing afterwards
he was kind of a big deal.
I don't want to say invented bourbon, but he invented the modern process of bourbon.
I feel so good about myself when I found that out, because I used to go to the Branding Iron. I don't know if you've ever there's a little restaurant bar in the middle of Kerwinsville called the Branding Iron. It was there for years.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah.
And
were you ever in it?
No,
probably not.
No, it was gone by the time I moved.
I think actually the bar was smaller than this room, but it was really...
And it was like an old West saloon.
It was like an old West saloon, and I used to go down there on Sundays.
It had the swinging doors.
Yeah, swinging doors and everything, and I would go down there, and when I walked in, the first time I remember sitting down, and I was just young, you know, a young guy, young father, and walked in. Because I saw that Crow, and I was like, I'm going to try the old Crow, you know. And
that's a good label. You commented on that. That label is a good label.
Do you remember Barb, lady, worked there? She remembered that. She was down at the Toasted Monkey. Can I say that on there? She was down when I was playing some music down there, and she said, I remember you used to come in and drink old Crow. And I said, how do you remember that? And I remembered it, and I would go in there, and that's what I drank, was the Old Crow bourbon.
Well, tell you what, Old Crow Medicine Show.
Yeah, the Old Crow Medicine Show, right? But then you were telling me about the Old Crow, and I was like, damn, that's impressive.
I want to do a little bit of research about the guys in Old Crow Medicine Show, because they sing that song from their self-titled album, Old Crow Medicine Show. The song is called Cocaine, and there's a line in that song is, drink your corn liquor, let your cocaine be, right? Yeah. So those guys had to have drank Old Crow. That has to be central to the name.
Right.
Now, Mark, what this means is, Mark, you are required. This is not optional. You are required to be here for the next time we do Old Crow, because Old Crow slipped to the loser's bracket, got defeated by Heaven Hill. So at a minimum, we're going to be trying each bourbon twice at a minimum. So the next time we do Old Crow, we have to.
Yeah.
I can't wait to talk about it, because I'm a bit nostalgic for it from the history I've read in the 19th century.
Do you feel like it kind of got a bum rap?
It did.
There's a lot of controversy surrounding that decision, too.
In Fred Minnick's book, where he wrote a book called Bourbon Curious, and he was talking about how 95% of what you see on these bourbon labels is bullshit.
Right.
Because it's all marketing. A lot of the distilleries that are trying to push their bourbons and push their different spirits in front of people, a lot of it is about the story. If they can get people to buy into the story. And actually sitting down and researching James Crow.
Yeah, you're not dealing with amateurs anymore. You're dealing with people that have been around the block a few times and researched a little bit, and they're into so the story definitely helps to sell.
Well, the story of James Crow and the sort of heights that bourbon was soaring in the 19th century with Abraham Lincoln and Grant, and one of my own personal heroes, Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens, was the very first poster boy.
You were saying that. That's impressive. God. I didn't know that either.
Mark Twain was literally on posters in the 1880s drinking Old Crow. And Old Crow, so that label now Dr. James Crow had passed away by this point, but that label.
It's kind of funny that, like, you think about Mark Twain, he was like a rock star back then.
Yeah, he was. He was.
That's what I need to look up some Mark Twain quotes. I mean, we have Danica Patrick in several spots on our website at this point, but maybe Mark Twain deserves a spot right next to Danica Patrick.
I don't think Mark's familiar with that, but Matt and I started a website years ago that we started it with a lot of ambition, but never did anything to it, and it was through GoDaddy, I think, and then our website was just a picture of Danica Patrick, because that's who
we purchased a URL and did nothing with
it. She was like the spokeswoman for GoDaddy.
Yeah,
so.
She's a large-breasted, sexy woman, yeah.
Very sexy.
Is she a porn star?
Well, I don't...
Race car driver.
Race car. And she actually owns a winery.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She just raced in her last Indy 500 mm-hmm. of her career. She wrecked. I felt bad for her in the last Indy 500. She wrecked. But she is dating Aaron Rodgers, by the way. I did have.
Verified.
The quarterback from the Green Bay Packers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. How about the other celebrity?
It's winery. One of those sports games, yeah. Mark. It's a sport bowl.
Please be in a dark sergeant.
Go sports.
Yeah, sports bowl.
Yeah.
Wait.
The one where they wear helmets, right?
Is this? I mean, you're involved in a bracket right now. This is.
I know, and I'm clueless as to that stuff. I don't know.
Just
anything.
Pick a winner. That's all we need to do.
Yeah, I don't.
Maybe subconsciously, by the way, we're avoiding the decision. You know that.
I'm an artist, man, so I can never. I'm always indecisive on. I'm not a competitive person, so I don't see anything as being more. Better. I always think that if you're in the game, you're in the game. So everybody's just important, you know. Well, so
and from an artistic standpoint, you kind of Jim Beam is good in and of itself because it's trying to be that. Rebel Yell is going to be good in and of itself, yeah, trying to be that.
I appreciate the product for whoever is being different and trying their own thing. And I guess, you know, sitting down and imagine starting a company of your own where you're sourcing all this whiskey. And then, you know, the blending process. How do they come up with their blend? Can you imagine?
Just the trial and error.
Yeah, the trial. Let alone trying to get a consistency from the vendor. So,
and I think that's the other thing, consistency.
Is it possible with whiskey? You know, when you were saying, not to interrupt, but you were saying earlier with the yeast, that's definitely consistency with this.
Well, that's what Dr. James Crowe did in the 1800s, is that he perfected what they call sour mash. So when, I don't think either of these bottles actually say sour mash, but some of our other ones said sour mash. And what that means is they're actually using the same strain of yeast.
Okay.
My question is, if you do that in beer, because all Mark definitely has more experience fermenting than Nate and I, but all three of us have fermented quite a bit of beer. If you do that in beer with the yeast, the subsequent generations, just due to,
right,
I mean, Darwinian evolution here, they will morph. Yeah. So what I've read, at least in beer circles for the yeast that you can use, is that they might be good up to 6 or 7 generations, right, but at that point, it will change the flavor of it. My question is, Jim Beam publishes that it's been using the same yeast strain for over 75 years. Is that yeast strain, from a biochemist standpoint,
the same?
The same.
Right.
There was a show, Dogfish Head Brewing.
Yeah, I was
Dogfish Head.
That.
Sam Calgione is the president and CEO of Dogfish Head. Right. The guy's from Maine, and now he lives in Delaware, Milton, Delaware. They had that show on the History Channel about him and his company.
He had biochemists
confirming the identical strains of yeast.
Oh, really?
Because he was challenged with consistency. If you go out and you buy a 120-minute Dogfish Head IPA, you want that flavor every time. Right. And it was a real challenge for him. So he was paying big bucks for biochemists to confirm the yeast strains.
Wow.
And that would be an interesting thing to experiment. I know, like in beer, if you go to a small craft brewing, you know, your local
brew pub, it's always different every time.
You buy that, the next batch, it's always different. Or if you homebrew, it's different.
Yeah.
If you buy a can of Budweiser, it's the same every time.
Yeah, and
so is Jim Beam is probably very similar.
Shame on human beings for, I hate to say that, but shame on human beings for being that.
Yeah.
Accepting that I want it the same way every time. Well, how do you know that the batch that wasn't exactly the same might be your
they might
most,
dump down the drain.
It might be your best whiskey you've ever had.
There are some distilleries. I was just reading this today. Distilleries in Kentucky, speaking about bourbon, that their president, CEO, when you walk in, instead of saying, you know, what do you have? Instead of saying, what's old? Where a lot of bourbon and whiskey, what is old? What do you have aged?
Yeah,
what's been the same? He wants to ask the question, what's new?
Right.
And they take pride in the fact that they're distilling something different.
Right.
So when you walk in, you go this year, but next year when you take that same vacation,
it's going to be different.
I kind of like that.
I mean,
well, think about, we've extolled the virtues between the three of us of Voodoo Brewing in Meadville, Pennsylvania, and now they have the place open in Pittsburgh too. And I love going there. There are the old tried and true, but I don't think I've ever been there when there wasn't something
brand new.
Yeah.
Brand new, you've never tasted before. They say, we have one keg of this. Do you want any of it? Yeah, we'll never have it again.
Yeah,
you know,
and that's
that great, moment you're
going to
have something.
That's the artistic part of it that I love. I don't really necessarily want to hear the same song over and over, or look at the same artwork over and over
and
again.
And it is boring when you go in there. It's like, oh, they have the same five beers
exactly, that they had before. Yeah, and it tastes the same. Well,
I guess... It's got to be, from a business standpoint, it's got to be a fine line that these people have to be able to, to walk between. I need to be able to maintain the customers that I have.
Right.
And...
Please them, but you also want to have new customers come in too. So it is
almost you want a bajillionaire that doesn't care about anything to come in and say this is the way I want to run this.
But the most successful artists are the ones that do it that way.
Yeah,
you know, they just say I'm doing it my way, and I don't want any.
They just create their art. Yeah.
Speaking about artists, the Killers, the band, the group of Killers, when they had that hugely successful first album. It came out, and I listened to a podcast and read an article, an interview with the guys in the group when they were recording, developing their songs, recording for the second album. They talked almost existentially, philosophically about this subject.
Right.
So we need to create an album, a second album, and we have a sound. We have a group. We have a sound. We have songs. We have a certain.
They have a sound.
Thing. We have that thing that people really like about us. And they like it about us because it was new and different, and that was our thing. So we're going to make a second album right now. The question is, do we do the same because that's what people love about us?
To roll into the same audience?
Or do we do something different
right.
because it's total catch-22.
Yeah. Sure. When it's a departure, do you lose... Here's the thing.
You're going to have people come out and bitch and say...
Right, do you lose your old fan base, but do you gain a new fan base? Yeah. A bigger fan base, maybe not.
Damned if you do and damned if you don't, really.
Yeah, exactly.
That reminded me of the celebrity winemakers. Maynard Keenan from Tool
has
a winery in Arizona, a winery in like this little tiny restaurant. Amazing wine
there. Sure, yeah.
But that's another group like that, too, where... I mean, I'm sure they get pressure from record labels, but they'll put an album out every
six, 7 years.
Yeah, they do it at their own pace, and it keeps their fan base is so rabid that they just sit and wait for it.
I have authors that I follow. Patrick Rothfuss is one of the authors that I follow. George R. R. Martin, who does the Game of Thrones, is another guy like this, too. He puts books out when he wants to put books out because he looks at it from the artist's perspective and says, no, I want to put out stuff that I'm comfortable with, that I want
to
do.
Just because it hit, he doesn't need to satisfy the market. He has to satisfy himself.
George R. R. Martin, in particular, has written great essays. I mean, just huge essays, almost artistically philosophical essays about why he does what he does. And he's only speaking for himself. Right. He's only speaking for himself. Right. But he says, I'm not doing this for the fans. I'm doing this because... I feel like I'm being true to my story and myself. And Game of Thrones, hugely HBO successful. The HBO series has now eclipsed his own book series that he's written over the last 15 years. So the show is now beyond what he's written. And still, he's saying, my next book will be out when it's out.
Right.
I mean, there's something almost artistically pure about that.
Because he's not doing it commercially. No. He's doing it because artistically, which is great.
And I think when you go back to... It would apply to authors as well as, like you said, with the Killers. You think about that first album that a band puts out.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of times it's their best.
Right.
Because you think they've probably been making that album for five, six years. Oh, yeah. Just developing that.
Or their whole lives. I mean,
it's developing themselves. Developing themselves as a band.
And when it hits,
it goes
bonkers, and then it's like, okay, you guys have 6 months to write your next
album. To do another one, when they get picked up by a major label. Yeah,
And there's very few that can duplicate.
That can do that, right. That's
it. It takes a true artist to...
Well, you know, speaking of this, Wilco, in 2004...
This is Matt that's going to interject really quickly here. Nate and Mark are amazing musicians, and they play in a band together, and I sit there and watch them on a pretty regular basis, whenever I can, by the way. I watch these guys play, so when they're coming from a perspective, when they talk about music, I want everybody to know that they know. By the way, I've made my decision. I have made my decision.
You have to do a little neat, though.
First. I will do a little neat of both, but I was sitting here listening to you guys talk, and I looked down at the trunk that we have in front of us that has the two bourbons. And I thought to myself, oh, I want another drink of fill in the blank. And that was the one that I wanted.
Jim Beam.
We'll see. Come on. I mean, we have to see here.
Yeah.
But Nate and Mark just both had another probably single finger splash of Jim Beam now, and we'll probably go back to the Rebel Yell. I didn't mean to interrupt. No. I really didn't.
Wilco.
Is what you're talking about.
I've been following Jeff Tweedy and Wilco since Uncle Tupelo days, which in the 90s, yeah. And Wilco, Jeff Tweedy, I guess, is the generator of Wilco and the Hub, but he has substantial world-class musicians that are on board with him, and they
contribute.
They contribute and create this aura around Jeff Tweedy, which is very beneficial to him, but Tweedy is very substantial on his own. Having said that, the artistic aspect of Tweedy, I think, is he's always followed this, I don't know if you call it, you really can't even call it a narrative because it's not written. It's just the fact that he has some this crazy muse that he can follow, and he executes it with every album and the songs. And I guess Wilco fans, if you're not a Wilco fan, maybe you won't get this. If you are, maybe perhaps you will. Maybe I'm in the dark, but this is my take on Tweedy. As far as art goes, I don't really even think he considers anything except for what he produces. He doesn't care about what you might think or what I might think about his next album. All he doesn't even care about if you buy his album. For crying out loud, when Star Wars came out, they gave the album for free. And the cool thing was that if you like this album enough, well, contribute back and buy maybe the vinyl or buy the disc or share it with somebody, you know. And they didn't have to do that. It's like something they did in this was two albums ago. Star Wars, great album. I ended up buying the vinyl, and it's a fantastic album. But I think, like with any type of product or any type of muse that you follow, it's all subjective. Here we are, three different people with three different personalities and three different palettes and musical taste and whatnot. And we can garner interest from this or that, and one of us may like this, but it doesn't mean it's any better or any worse. It's just that's the beauty of it. It's so interesting that we have all of this stuff to sit down and drink.
In 2018, it's amazing that we have access to all this stuff.
Exactly.
Too.
Yeah.
I mean, almost drink to technology and drink to the age that we're living in right now, because we have, if you're stubborn enough and sort of ardent in pursuing your passions, you will find it, and you're going to find some like-minded people out there, which is fantastic.
Sure.
I mean, this is a great time.
Can I speak about this whiskey?
So we're all swirling our Jim Beams, right?
Harsh neat, isn't it?
I'm honestly, man, I was sitting here thinking when I took that sip, it's smoother to me.
Ooh, see, I've been thinking the opposite.
It's smoother to me than when I tasted it all over the ice.
All right, so the three of us have Jim Beam in our glass right now.
I'm getting a smoother, and I really like this. I mean,
it's much more... Much I
oh think the nose I, on this you, it, yeah. it hits you like
yeah.
a
yeah
it's
but
complex.
I think I'm getting it very complex, but I thought it was smoother right now. Maybe it's because I just came fresh. I don't know. Came fresh, you know.
Came fresh.
Came fresh. You know what? That's an old farmer term.
What does that mean?
When a cow comes fresh.
I don't know what that means.
Well, she's ready to breed.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I just come fresh.
Ready for some loving.
Yeah.
I went, but I heard what I really meant was,
This is getting weird.
It is getting weird.
But are you getting, you're thinking it's, I for whatever reason, it's super smooth.
Well, and
smooth.
I think it's because I just finished
that.
Your
nose is better on this.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, and it's definitely way more complex. But again, I came into this a clean palate, but now I've got whiskey lips, and I'm thinking...
Which is, I think I had the watered down Rebel Yell on my last sip before this. It seems a little bit more intense.
This one's got that...
Camping.
You know, yeah, this one...
Intense.
This one, to me, doesn't have an arc.
It works better if you say get it, too, after the joke.
Get it? Intense.
This one doesn't have the arc of, like, wine or whiskey. You know, either it's this way or it's that way, and you can't see what I'm doing, but...
He's making a wave with his hand.
He's making a wave with the hand.
Yeah, it sort of peaks and then goes into the trough.
Think of a bandwidth, It kind of peaks, and then you have your finish, where this kind of... For me, it's like the whole way through, it's sort of this...
Like some sort of consistent...
Consistent, yeah, whereas... It's flatlined, exactly.
Yeah, whereas, like with the Rebel Yell, I think it was kind of bland at first, but and the then finish, it kind of...
Yeah, it escalated. Peaks. Exactly, yeah. That's what I'm talking about. The bandwidth got a little bit wider at the end of it. Although this is really good. Mm-hmm. I'm
going to give the Rebel Yell a neat try. Before I render, but I...
We've got to do that, yeah.
This is a tough decision. I haven't made up my mind yet.
This is what we expected. This is the only in the round one here. We have two seeds right next to one another. This is what you'd expect in March and the NCAA tournament too, right?
This is Duke, North Carolina.
That's right. It is.
I thought, man. I was just going to say how smooth I thought this was.
Boy, and that I just poured just a tiny bit of this Rebel Yell, and it's almost like no nose.
Yeah,
it's dulled. I don't want to call it bland because I mean we all sat here and decided it was a good whiskey. It was a good bourbon.
But you know, wine. You guys have had how many multiple bottles of wine? When you sniff the glass, you think.
And then it's completely different when you taste it.
Yeah, so that's the nose thing. I think.
Now this neat. I'm really.
So you're on to the Rebel Yell now.
Yes,
we're still on the Jim Beam. Yeah. I'm almost got on this Jim Beam. I have to say this. I'm almost getting like a Granny Smith apple taste. Just that sharpness of the Granny Smith apple. That
like almost like a tart tannin or something? Yeah. I mean, what?
To me, I don't know. I try not to think of it. I just try to let it be what it is. Yeah, and that's what's stuck in my mind is a Granny Smith apple.
That's what we've said too since, you know, we kind of started this process is that
yeah, we're not analyzing it to the point where it's like, no. This is getting a score of it. It's just like,
we've done ever since we've met. Yep. Sit around a bottle of whiskey. What do you think? What are you tasting? Right now I'm getting this. Well, yeah, it's hard to get a nose off of this stuff. You really got to stick your nose in the glass.
So Mark and I are now drinking the Rebel Yell. So all three of us now have Rebel Yell in our glasses.
I don't know if it's the residue from the...
Well, that's what. Yeah, we haven't washed out our glasses here too. Yeah. But
I don't know if it's a residue from the. No, I'm getting a pretty good sniff of this now.
I would still describe
it around a little bit.
Yeah, swirl around. I
would still describe the Rebel Yell as dulled on the nose compared to Jim Beam. It's not that there's nothing there.
No,
the
finish on this one does it ramps right up.
It does. Yeah.
See, I feel this is smoother but less complex.
This is going to be a good decision rendered.
I still haven't made my decision.
I've got a burn on my tongue from the Jim Beam, which like that cinnamon burn almost. I'm afraid that anything I taste now is going to be.
I'm actually really curious because I completely 100% agree with you on the cinnamon with a Jim Beam, and I want to see what the experts say. Right. The ones that
know.
Obviously the ones that know and they've tried hundreds or thousands of bourbons and they know.
Yeah, but you know what? Again, going back to the music and art thing, it's all subjective because... Yeah,
what does it mean to you? What does it mean to you?
Yeah. Going back to that Anthony Bourdain quote.
Yeah.
Do you want to listen to the guy sitting there in a stuffy like a room taking notes about bourbon? Or do you want to just...
Experience it.
You just want to experience it.
It's
like Brady Smith Apple.
Yeah. That's what I got. Maybe they'll say you're an idiot. I don't care. That's...
No, I completely agree with reserving judgment on how to do something. On the other hand, let me give you another art example. My wife and I attended We went to the Andy Warhol Museum.
Oh, nice.
And if... been there a couple times now... Every time you go in there, they have those Andy Warhol staples that everybody's familiar with the Elvises and Marilyn Monroe's. The Campbell's can of soups. But they have some other stuff there that's sort of in that pop art style, but different things. There was a bag of cat litter. Now, it wasn't actually a bag of cat litter, but it looked like a bag of cat litter. It felt like a bag of cat litter. And that's what it was. It was just a bag of cat litter leaning up against the wall. And then there was the little plaque that said bag of cat litter by whatever artist. And I kept looking at that thinking, what the hell is that?
I know.
What is that? Is that art? But when the museum curator came around and she gave us a tour of it and we got the opportunity to listen to an expert kind of explain why is this here? What am I looking at? It really did. It made me appreciate that art. It made me appreciate the bag of cat litter because I understood in context why it was there and what the purpose of it was.
What was the purpose of it? Yeah. I don't get that.
It was...
Where do you say this is art?
Now, this is Matt's understanding of this here, is that I think what Andy Warhol was able to do in the 1960s in particular, and I think it was mostly in the 1960s into the 1970s, he was able to show us things that we were kind of as human beings in America at the time inundated with, whether it was advertisements or people or celebrities or pop stars or magazine clippings or newspaper ads or whatever it was, we were surrounded by this stuff. And we blocked it out mentally because as human beings, I think we do that. It's almost white noise because it sits around us. And what he as the artist did is he wanted you to look at it. And he almost wanted to physically take the back of your head and point your eyeballs to this thing and say, no, look at it. Look at it. You're still look at it. So whether that was a Campbell's soup can, you walk into the grocery store and you see Campbell's soup everywhere. And he's like, no. I know that you recognize want to blow by
the everyday life. There's art in everything,
and
he
wants you to look at it. So Marilyn Monroe, she's everywhere. She's that person. Elvis, he's everywhere. He's that person. But he showed you these prints again and again and again and again, different shades and colors. And he showed you these walls of Elvis Presley, of Marilyn Monroe, of these Campbell soup cans. And it's like you wanted to say, no, look at it. You haven't looked at it. You've seen it, but you haven't looked at it.
Right.
So that's the idea of the bag of cat litter. Everybody has a bag of cat litter. Or, you know, every third person household in America has a bag of cat litter sitting in the house. Fine. Look at it.
Is it for their cat litter box?
It's probably not. Fuck you.
Nice. But here's
we'll get back to that fucking.
Here's my take on it. Here's my take on that whole thing. When you really look at the period, we were just coming off of Jackson Pollock, okay? Yeah. Jackson Pollock was the rock star of the day in the 50s with the total abstract, you know, beautiful stuff. Flinging.
Method.
Yeah.
Flinging. Everybody knew what the color red was and what the color blue was, but have you actually looked at them side by side with just a little bit more blue and just a little bit more red? And like,
but just how he would lay out these massive canvases and spray paint all over them with the brushes and whatnot, and wield this paint like a, you know, it's brilliant stuff. But Andy Warhol sort of, and you know why bulls have rings in their noses?
I've always heard that it's to be led around, so somebody could physically grab the ring and lead the bull by the nose.
They
right?
totally submit to that ring. You can take that bull and pull that ring and lay it on its back like a dog would do when it's ready to let you pet its belly. Mm-hmm. And you could do that with a bull. To me, that era of Jackson Pollock was so formidable. And not, but in a good way, just big and burly like a bull. And Andy Warhol comes along and paints a fucking can of soup.
The one thing I always have a hard time relating to with some of that art is the people that make it art.
Right.
What I mean by that is, like, I mean, you look at the Jackson Pollock stuff and you think, like, the average person look at it and say, well, anyone could do that.
Yeah.
You could just
But,
like, who was the person that made that famous?
Right.
It wasn't him.
Right.
It was the person that was willing to pay a shitload of money for it.
Right.
And then it attracts...
Again, all of this is subjective, very subjective.
Well,
because
I'll tell you what, you know, there's people out there that are going to be willing to pay a shitload of money for different bottles of bourbon and different bottles of whiskey.
And here we are. Yeah. Is it any better? Is it any different? Is it any more complex?
So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is it any more than what we are experiencing right here? Under $20, do you have to spend $400 on Pappy Van Winkle's? Even if you can get it.
Well, actually, speaking of the even if you can get it, this is something I talked about earlier. Pennsylvania, where we're podcasting from, is really, I don't want to say oppressive, but our state really
is. It's pretty fucking dry, man.
I'll tell you what.
It's pretty fucking dry.
A couple, just this past week, Kentucky State Legislature passed this make whiskey free again. I can't remember quite the name of it, but they passed this piece of legislation that allowed Kentucky to ship directly from distilleries. So if you want Pappy Van Winkle's, whatever it is, you can contact them directly and ship it. The problem is there's only 6 or 7 other states that allow that. Pennsylvania is totally on the other side. Yeah. You can't do shit.
No,
and you really can't.
Well, but I was at Buffalo Trace, right? And the distillery, thinking that maybe I can score a good bottle of bourbon. Well,
you did get some nice stuff from there, though.
Yeah, I did. I got some good whiskey, but I had talked to one of the people that worked there, and he had, this is what I was told. He had said there's a lottery, and it's the same thing with anybody. Like any distributor, they get whatever they produce, that's what they get.
Yeah.
Year to year. So even at the store,
whatever they get?
There's only so much that they have year to year.
Okay.
There's only so much, you know what I mean? They only have so many barrels.
Right.
So many barrels of this whiskey, and when it's bottled, there's only so much of it that has to go to, this is what you get. So it's like the whole thing of the police were selling bottle or cases of Pappy Van Winkle out of their trunks that was confiscated or whatever. I read an article. I don't want to go into that because I don't really know enough about it, but I've read about it.
We called Dr. James Crow a chiropractor in
episode. Yeah, well, that's cool. Okay, so anyway, looking back,
grandfather of bourbon.
So I'm going to Buffalo Trace thinking I might be able to score some really good shit, and I started talking to one of the employees, and he said, "No, there's kind of a lottery deal. You can sign up." And he said, "We as employees have to sign up to this lottery deal also. So because there's only so many bottles, if you are chosen, then you can buy a bottle."
Reading an article from Whiskey Advocate that was saying that the top 10 whiskeys for the summer of 2018, and I read that they scored a Glenmorangie 10-year original. The Glenmorangie 10-year original single malt, and it's actually aged in bourbon barrels. And they scored it a 93 out of 100. Now, I don't know exactly how these scorings work because I'm not an expert, but 93 is a pretty high number.
Yeah.
This bottle was $50. So I went into the state store and said, do you have this? And they said, no, but Dubois does.
Yeah.
And it was just a matter of this Thursday. I went in and bought this bottle. It was actually on sale for $44.99. So I got a $45 bottle of whiskey that we, the three of us, totally need to have at some point. It's not a bourbon. It's a single malt. But it's aged in bourbon barrels that I'm excited about. But you're right. It's one of those things. The girl sat down at her computer and she said, "Oh, we can get a case of it here by next week," which is kind of nice to be able to do that. They're not privately owned.
Right. They don't have to.
It's this weird, I don't know, maybe it is a weird, I've never even looked at this before or felt this before, that it's a weird catch-22. I feel like we're being restricted. On the same time, as a state, they probably have some pretty massive purchasing power.
Well, here's another thing, too, about, and I don't want to be an advocate for the state, but think about this. Every liquor store you go into, you pay the same price.
That's true.
If it's on sale,
it's on sale statewide.
Yeah, exactly. And if it's private, that bottle of Woodford, one of my favorites is Woodford Double Oak. And I actually asked Clearfield, and they said, "Yeah, we have some in Wherever-ville. They'll ship it there because they just never carried it in the Clearfield store."
The $20 bottle we were talking about before that I was trying to find?
The Wellers.
There's another example. Exactly. That's why it's $20.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. If you'd have it in a private collection where somebody could sell it for whatever they want.
If it's really selling, they're going to say, Whiskey Advocate. Exactly.
Whiskey Advocate marked that bottle, that Glenmorangie 10-year, as $55. It's $54.99, and I bought it for $44.99 because it was on sale right now.
Has everybody made their decision yet?
I have. Matt has.
I'm still rolling.
So, Matt, do you want to make your decision by pouring a ceremonial?
Yeah, I'm gonna pour just a little bit for myself, and I'm gonna surprise myself by saying, Jim Beam is what I'm reaching for right now. Which, again, part of me thinks, oh wow, going into this, I was thinking Rebel Yell's gonna win because it's the one that you and I really liked, and I still do. But I'm choosing Jim Beam because of the complexity. I think if the finish of Rebel Yell lingered and I liked it, but the nose of Jim Beam and the complexity of it won out in the end, and I'm impressed. For the third best-selling whiskey in the world right now, Jim Beam, this white label, Yeah, came through. Under $20. I'll pick it over Rebel Yell. Okay. I will.
Have we had that neat?
Yes. We have. We've had both whiskeys on the rocks and both whiskeys neat at this point.
Perhaps I'm beyond my subjective point of view and I should just leave.
This is a tough decision.
It is very...
Nate is reaching for the Jim Beam as well. So we're going to really put Mark on the spot because Jim Beam is moving forward with the two votes here.
But your vote, I mean, you pick the one you like the best. Yeah, it doesn't matter really at this point.
It's a simple question.
It's already won.
Which one do you want more?
You're filling your glass right now. Which one do you want to put in it?
That's a good way to put it, too. You've got
one. And I almost put Rebel Yell in just because it was a little smoother. Same with the complexity.
Can I say a few words?
Sure.
I don't want to say narrow bandwidth of the Jim Beam. I'm impressed by the Jim Beam because it's consistent the whole way through.
Continuous. Almost.
It is. It has a great nose, and I'm really impressed with the Jim Beam. Although, the Rebel Yell, it didn't have a nose, but the smoothness really got me. Mm-hmm. I mean, for drinking a whiskey neat, I'm a neat guy.
That's where I would agree with you completely. Neat, I think I would rather have the Rebel Yell, which is funny that I didn't pour the Rebel Yell in here because I'm drinking this neat, but I think I would rather have the Rebel Yell.
It's close. This is, by the way, I'm glad we've decided a double elimination bracket because it'd be interesting to see Rebel Yell in now the loser's bracket coming up through. So.
Even though I can't get away from the finish of the Rebel Yell, I really like that expansiveness. It's almost like it can go on forever where... The Jim Beam sort of was consistent and it's I'm not saying consistency without complexity. It's very complex. I appreciate that too. This is really hard for me to do, but to be honest with you, if Rebel Yell had the nose of the Jim Beam, it would be one of my favorite whiskeys. Yeah.
It would be a no-brainer.
Yeah. This finish of the Rebel Yell, so I'm going to
have to... Mark, it was so close before you even say yours. As you were explaining that, I almost switched my vote. I did. I almost said, I'm going to go back to Rebel Yell.
Well, Mark's got the cork in one hand, a bottle in the other. Sorry, and he's just poured a glass of Rebel Yell.
I don't know. I'm sitting here thinking...
It was razor thin.
Yeah.
I almost switched my vote to Rebel Yell.
I don't know what to say, but very impressive whiskeys, both of them.
I mean, for $16.99,
yeah.
Rebel
what the
Yell,
fuck, man?
And for $17.99,
I mean, buy them both and have a great party. Well, Jesus.
Last episode, you said, you know, if you only have $9, for God's sake, don't buy Heaven Hill instead of. Right. But this one's if you've got $17 and you could buy both of these, either one. I mean, you wouldn't make a mistake. Put it that way.
Let's look at it this way. I'm a neat guy. I like this whiskey neat. The Rebel Yell.
It is
even though it doesn't have the nose, it's very smooth. The Jim Beam has that harshness at the beginning, but it's very complex. A lot of great flavors in there, but that escalating finish of the Rebel Yell, I think that takes it for me. I have to be honest.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Cheers to that.
I could have easily switched.
I don't know what to say.
Well, we've got Matt and Nate with glasses of Jim Beam right now, and Mark with a glass of Rebel Yell, and
close.
It's a good thing.
Very close.
Yeah.
It's so smooth.
It does.
But the finish just kind of expands. Oh, I love that.
So Jim Beam moves forward. Rebel Yell falls to the loser's bracket. What's on next episode?
Oh, by the way, I had this set up because I researched a tiebreak if needed after our first episode when we didn't have a tiebreak set up. Now, we didn't need it mathematically today because there was going to be three of us, but a website called The Whiskey Jug had actually done tastings of both, the Jim Beam white label versus the Rebel Yell. And it scored both on a scale of 100, which we're not doing. We don't have to do. We're just choosing a winner. But the Jim Beam was scored at a 79 of 100, and Rebel Yell was a 72 of 100. So if for some reason the three of us couldn't have decided today, I decided to pick the Whiskey Jug.
Right.
Whiskey Jug would have chosen the Jim Beam.
Right.
There. And their overall description of the Jim Beam Actually had to do with the finish, and it had to do with a long finish of watery caramel, corn, citrus, and a faint bit of oak.
I get a better finish from the Rebel Yell.
The Rebel Yell finish had to do with caramel syrup, fade to dried corn, and raw alcohol. The Rebel Yell finish was better than the Jim Beam for me. The overall for the Rebel Yell, it's a weeded bourbon. It compares it to Maker's Mark, which is also a heavily weeded bourbon as well. Outside of our parameters of under $20, but the Maker's Mark is heavily weeded, yeah.
So what is the next matchup?
Next week is our fourth matchup, and it has to do with another Beam Suntory. We've had Old Crow, Jim Beam White Label, and our third Beam Suntory is Old Granddad.
Ooh.
Old Granddad is our number 3 seed that comes in at $17.99 a bottle. And our number 6 seed, Evan Williams. I'm excited for this one.
That should be a close one, too.
Evan Williams is pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what I've heard some great stuff about. I've never tasted Evan Williams a couple weeks ago.
Evan Williams is one of those quintessential good, cheap whiskeys.
It is. It's really good.
Evan Williams is one of those names. I've decided that despite our knocking of Dr. James Crowe, when a whiskey bottle has a name on it, it means something.
Better research it.
Evan Williams is one of those names that actually has... I couldn't find a whole lot about Ezra Brooks last episode. Evan Williams, on the other hand, there's a lot written about him and his influence. Number 3, Old Granddad. Nate and Matt, the two of us, we actually had a couple glasses of it a couple weeks ago, or maybe last week. I can't remember when we did this. It was very nice, too.
Yeah, it was.
It was a good one, so... Looking forward to number 3, Old Granddad versus number 6, Evan Williams. So, Mark, I just want to say it was a delight.
Yes,
cheers, guys. Anthony Bourdain. I hope I added something to your podcast and didn't take
it. Anthony Bourdain, it's more about the ambiance and who you're drinking with than it is ever about the whiskey. So, I appreciate
cheers to you guys for doing this podcast, and cheers to Anthony Bourdain for leading us all in the right direction.
Clear, but our winner 2-1 vote was Jim Beam. Split decision, 2-1. Jim Beam over Rebel Yell. We are Bourbon Buddy Brackets. Our website is bourbonbuddybrackets.com. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. And cheers, guys. Thanks for a good
episode. I'm even going to just put a little bit more Rebel
Yell. Oh, he's going back to the Rebel Yell to finish it up.
It's a tie!
It's a tie!
It's like the assassination of Archduke Francis Ferdinand in August of 1914.
Started World War I.
Exactly, but it was just the straw that broke the camel's back there. Well, this is a bag of bourbon, and the bag actually says Rebel Yell, but what's in here is not Rebel Yell, and Nate knows it's not. I filled it up with one of our 4 bourbons, and we have tasted now the 7, 8, 9, and 10 seeds. So inside of this is one of those 4 bourbons.
And I have to guess.
And you have to guess. That's the game for right now.
Bear in mind, I'm 3/4 of the way through my 20th beer.
That's right. You drank 20 Yingling lagers today.
In the sun. It's hard to get the nose.
I think you actually have to put it in your nose. You might be able to taste it better that way. So first off, you already can cross one off the list now that you put the bag to your lips, right? Mm-hmm. It's definitely not Banker's Club.
Right.
Right. I could tell because you didn't spit it into the fire to create a fireball.
I think I know what it is.
Well, let's hear it. So it's got to be either...
I think it's Heaven Hill.
You think Heaven Hill? Wasn't Heaven Hill.
No?
Nope.
Ezra Brooks.
It was Ezra Brooks is what it was. And
that was my second guess.
Well,
obviously, because I said that second.
Well, yeah, but you knew it wasn't Old Crow.
No.
And I think that we had talked about the fact that Old Crow and Heaven Hill were very different from one another.
Yeah.
And I bet if we had had the Ezra Brooks and the Heaven Hill, they would have been much similar. Yeah, Ezra Brooks is what I dumped in here. This is Hundo Proof, too.
Hundo Proof.
I read that 100 Proof, 50 Proof, because Heaven Hill, or Ezra Brooks calls it an honest proof. All bottled and bond have to be 100 Proof. But the proof had to do with lighting a string that had been soaked in the alcohol. And if you lit it and it burned too fast, it had too much alcohol. If it sputtered and didn't light, it didn't have enough alcohol. But I guess a solid burn was right at 50 proof. That was 50% alcohol.
100 proof.
100 proof, 50% alcohol. Mark would be like a proof came from.